UFO Files with Jerry Pippen. We're live here recording. You'll hear this later, but as you can tell, we have a studio audience. We'll probably go to the audience before it's over. It's a pleasure to have our next guest. The Paranormal Radio Network is how I best know him, but he has a big UFO background, and we'll get into that in a minute. Let's say hello to Joe Montalvo.
Yeah.
Tell us, you know, when do you do your shows here?
Actually, we're going to be following you most of the week.
Okay.
Today we do have a support group meeting for ICAR. It's an abduction support group meeting that will be held when y'all are finished today. We'll actually be using this room for an abduction support group meeting, which is we only get to do when we can attend conferences.
Now tell us a little bit about your UFO part first before we get into the radio part.
Okay. I'm international director for ICAR, which is basically we're an abduction-based organization. We mainly research abduction cases. We do UFOs. We have added the UFO division in the last few weeks because of demand. We are now the largest UFO alien abduction organization on the planet. Far larger than MUFON had ever reached in its heights. So we're very serious about this. We do a lot of work. We spend a lot of money on this. At this conference alone, I think we have 20 or 30 contactees present that will be either doing interviews or at the panel discussion later today. I also, tomorrow, will be giving an abduction lecture in the workshop right behind this room as well. For me, I've been doing this about 25 years. I've been doing alien abduction research now for just about 25 years. ICAR itself has investigated over 7,000 cases.
Where is this organization based out of? You probably have several...
Well, the home base is New Orleans, Louisiana, which Katrina tried to wipe out.
Yeah, I started to ask you about that.
Well, I was very fortunate. My house only got about 3 inches of water.
That's
so I was
good.
Very, very fortunate.
Okay, do you have local chapters around? Is that the deal?
Yes, we do. We have several states with directors in them now. We also have clinical hypnotherapists in several of the states now as well. We try to offer kind of a counseling support as well for these people, because I notice a lot of the contactees tend to have emotional unstable problems. Some of them have drug abuse, alcohol abuse problems, things like that, which we do refer to professional counselors for that, but. We do try to help these people to come to terms with these contacts and try to understand them better and really try to make their incorporate them into their life.
When you talk about this, when you first got interested in this, to now in this journey of 25 years, had the story changed a lot from what you thought it'd be like?
Actually, I have to be honest. When I first got involved with this, I thought these people were crazy. I'm
really?
not going to lie about it. After about 10 years of research, I realized it was something.
So you just dismissed it early on. It interested you because probably they had a psychological problem or something.
Well, I had met a particular person who was very gifted, very talented, had a very high IQ, but they kept telling me they were being visited by aliens. And I was like,
Well, that isn't a normal conversation.
No, it's
so
not.
So we understand.
But I understood who the person was, so it didn't seem like they were looking for attention. And they definitely weren't crazy. So, I had to kind of stop and think, well, maybe there's something going on. I'll keep looking, and maybe I'll find a reason for it. Well, 7,000 cases later, I'm convinced beyond any reasonable doubt that this is something that happens on a pretty fairly regular basis amongst contactees, and it seems to run bilateral, generational through families. We have several cases we're working where there's 6 or 7 generations in the same family. As a matter of fact, one of the groups will be speaking here today.
Now, when you take these 7,000 cases, and if you were an attorney and went to court, you probably could win a circumstantial case that these people are being abducted.
There's more than enough circumstantial evidence to win a court case. I don't know if we could ever get one, but I would love to try to sue the government for the existence of abduction cases. But then if you won the case, I'm scared it would start a massive lawsuit against the government, and I don't want to be known for that one. So.
Now, when we talk about that, though, when we lay out this evidence, that is one of the problems. It has to be circumstantial, or have you found lots of backup evidence, physical evidence?
There is some trace evidence, not enough for me to say it's conclusive evidence. I'm sure some people would argue a different point. for me, it's going to be more conclusive when I can drag E.T. in here and put him on the microphone.
Well, right. You and I have the same ambition. We want to knock on the saucer door and say, hey, come on out.
Let's do an interview.
Yeah, right. Talk to me.
And that's what makes it tough. I mean, circumstantial evidence is great for a court of law, but for science, it's not. Scientists want hard, credible evidence so that they can prove this beyond a reasonable doubt.
So basically what we have is very little real evidence, scientific evidence to back things up, but we have a huge amount of the population when you stop and think about it. How many, you know, if you carry your 7,000 cases forward, how many people, we do a little thing on our radio show about maybe millions of people have been abducted.
Well, we figure it like this. If you take the 7,000 cases and you realize that most of their family are probably contactees, that 7,000 just ballooned into about 200,000. If you take that as only 2% of the population who are abducted report an abduction, that increases to somewhere around 1.5 billion.
Billion as is betting. Right? Not million.
No, as in billion.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And when we hear these kind of numbers, we all kind of go, well, that's an impossibility. But when you really understand that, when you start looking at the caseloads bilateral across the planet, and you start looking, because we're not the only ones doing this research, probably most prominent, but we're not the only ones. There's probably 15 or 20,000 cases in the United States that are being investigated by several different groups. And we do estimate that it's less than 2% of contactees that come forward. And that's based on families. You know, you'll get one person in a family who'll come forward when you know there's five or six others in the family that are contactees.
Well, when there's people in the audience I've talked to here between shows, and more than one has said, well, I didn't know that Aunt Joe or Aunt Betty or Uncle Joe had an abduction story. But they had something they're going to tell me about when I told them I was coming to Roswell. I mean, that happens all the time.
It's common. It's commonplace. And what you're going to find out is, through research, we found out that if mom's being abducted, more than likely grandpa and grandma was abducted, great-grandmama was abducted, and so on and so forth back. But when you come forward, the grandchildren are being abducted, the children are being abducted, the great-grandchildren are being abducted. Now, we know this because we have several cases now. And when you start thinking about this, If you take that 7,000 and start adding in their family lines, and a lot of times contactees have a tendency to group up together. They have a unique way of finding each other. I'm not even sure how, Jerry, to be honest with you, but somehow or another, whether it's via the internet, malls, conventions, they have a way of finding each other. So a lot of times what you find when you find one contactee, you'll usually find 10 or 15 of their friends or associates that are having the same type of experiences. So when you start adding up friends and family, you come up with some very large numbers. It's actually kind of scary when you sit down and think about it, that this many people on our planet could be taken either against their will. Some of them say they cooperate, but some of them say it's against their will, without any cooperation from our government. I mean, somebody's got to know. There's no way this could go on this large of a scale without somebody knowing about it.
Well, Joe, what do you think's going on here? I mean, why are they taking these people?
Boy, isn't that the question?
Yeah. You've investigated a lot of people.
Well, see, our problem is we found that this has been going on a really long time. When I first got involved, I thought aliens...
It was something recent.
Recent.
Right?
I thought, you know, Roswell was the start of it. Mm-hmm. When I started doing research and realizing that you can go back as far as the Sumerians and find contact experience, well, I realized right then and there, they're not here to conquer the planet, because if they were, they would have done it 6,000 years ago when there was, 20 million of us. Would have been a much easier job. If they were truly here to guide us and help us, well, they would have started 6,000 years ago. We'd be a much more enlightened species and a much more advanced species.
You know, if they were helping us, they didn't do a very good job.
My point exactly. So the thing of it is we've realized that, especially with the Greys, they have their own agenda, and humans are simply part of that agenda. We're not even the whole agenda. We're just part of it. And then you have to stop and wonder, because, you know, when you start looking at the Greys are running several types of experiments, from what we like to call emotional response experiments to different types of breeding experiments. Actually several other types of physical experiments that go along with those. So, you know, we know that they're doing these, so it kind of makes it hard to really pin down an agenda per se as far as why they decided to pick on this particular race. There's a lot of speculation. And what we started doing about 1995, we started programming contactees when they were having contact to subconsciously ask, why is this happening? Why do you want me? Why are you abducting my family? Why is this going on? And why is it? And is this going to go on for much longer?
So in other words, you're trying to get the abductees you're working with the next time they're abducted to ask. Have you been successful with that?
With a lot of the contactees and keepers, we have been. Abductees, not so much.
What are the answers?
Most of them have answers like they're breeding a new segment of this population for colonization somewhere else. Now, that bothers me in the fact that why would they do that if we're all happy and healthy living here? You know, those kind of things beg, what's going on here? But a lot of when you ask them will tell you that they're developing stuff like host bodies or husk bodies where they can transfer consciousness. It's almost like they're expecting something to happen on this planet. Some of the contactees say they're actually here watching, observing, and preparing part of the species for when this happens, so that this species will survive one way or another.
The 2012 scenario, more or less.
More or less, yeah. And that's another thing that I find interesting, because if you look at all the religious texts, it kind of points to the same thing. If you start looking at a lot of like the Oracle of Delphi, even Notre Dame and the Aztecs and the Mayans and all, it starts pointing to a particular event. Now, if 2012 is a date, I'm sure we're going to all find out here real soon, because it's not very far away. I'm kind of skeptical about the 2012 date because of the way it was decoded, but still, it is quite in the realm of possibility. What bothers me, Jerry, is you have the alien contactees, the religious people, the religious fanatics, the different psychic people. It's all coming together at one point now, and that's a little bit more than a coincidence. At first, you could say, well, maybe it's coincidence that Notre Dame and the Aztecs are saying basically the same thing. But well, now you have five or six different areas that are seeming to fold in to one spot.
Are you saying we're acting out of play? It's predestination?
I don't know if it's predestined or if... In one aspect, I guess it is predestined in the fact that somewhere along the line, somebody had an idea that something was going to happen to this planet several generations back or several thousand years back. What that is exactly, that's anybody's guess. It's a question we ask to every contactee that we meet. Do you have any information?
In advertising, and we deal with that because we're in broadcasting, perception is reality, and if you keep talking about a certain product long enough, people begin to accept that. So that may be part of this action.
Yeah, it is. Now, what's weird is we have one full third of all of our contactees have what we like to call the Holocaust dream. Now, this isn't a dream of global disaster, per se, like a meteor hit and the caldera blown up. Mm-hmm. What they're talking about, basically, is they'll describe, like one lady was telling me about Houston. She said she was driving into Houston, and all she could see was mounds of bodies and bulldozers moving the bodies. But there was no physical damage to the city itself. She said there was some fires out of control and stuff like that. Now, I've heard this now about 1,800 times from about 1,800 different kinds, and they give almost identical descriptions. That's what scares
me. And these are
me.
People who had no way to talk to the other people.
No, they don't. They're not
some,
any
some of them might
up.
Have read something on the Internet, but not all of them.
Well, actually, until just recently, none of this was made public. We hadn't made any of this public. Mm-hmm. And a matter of fact, a lot of the abduction criteria we use to determine who's a contactee and who's not, it still hasn't been made public. For the simple fact, we'll never know who's lying and telling the truth. But with these Holocaust dreams, they get into quite a bit of detail. What it seems like is it seems like there is some kind of virus or plague that swept across this planet in a matter of 3 or 4 days and killed 2/3 of the population. Well, we all know with the biological weapons that both the Russia, United States, and China have now that that's not beyond the realm of possibility. Mm-hmm. They also say that contactees are immune to it. Whatever it is will leave the contact segment of the population intact.
Well, if we want to use some logic, and maybe that's the real simple reason of the abductions and the hybrid program, to make sure the human race stays.
Yeah, it does seem like they have a vested interest in us surviving. I wish I knew why, but it seems more than just a passing interest. It seems like a very focused effort. And we're not talking about one alien race here. Best we can tell, we're talking about the Greys, the human types, and what people like to call the reptilians. We call them amphibians, but they like to call them reptilians. We found that over the years, the reptiles have webbed hands and webbed feet and are warm-blooded, so it kind of rules them out of being reptiles.
Yeah.
But they do look a lot like a lizard. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of strange in itself. But all in all, you know, when we sit down and look at the three different types, it seems to be that they're working in an orderly, progressive manner towards a specific goal with several underlying sub-agendas. We tried to put this on one agenda. We really did as a group. We really tried to, but you can't. There's too many other things going on.
Do you think all the three groups are working in unison, or are they separate?
It looks like the Grays are the big boss, and everybody else is just doing their agendas. And the reason why is, Jerry, is at first, I used to hear stories back in the 70s that the Grays worked for the Palladians or the human-type aliens in Nordax, or sometimes they worked for the Reptilians. So, you know, I kind of went along those premises. Well, after doing enough research, you will find that some contactees will have an experience where there's a human and a Gray present. But they're a human contact. These Gray seems to be observing. You'll see that in reptilians. You do not see that in Gray contacts. Gray contactees are exclusive Gray contacts. So they also tell you when a Gray's present in a ship, when there's an abduction going on, what other races there will give way to the Grays. They will actually move out of their way. A lot of contacts say there's almost even a little bit of fear there. Like if they didn't get out the way, something nasty might happen to them.
Have you had stories of anybody witnessing nasty things happening? I mean, like
not so much to the aliens, now to each other. That's not an uncommon thing.
I understand.
Yeah, that's not uncommon.
But the aliens, not to each other.
Not as far as we can tell. Now okay. There is a group now that swears there's a rogue group of Grays running around. There is some evidence for it, but nothing that we can really put our fingers on.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk to him about his UFO program he does, and we'll go to the audience for some questions as well. You're going to write a book? You have a book or something?
Richard Dolan just got on to me, Jerry, about that. He told me, when are you going to write a book? To be honest with you,
I was talking to a couple of the people that helped me on the shows, and I say, well, you know, he's so active. I'm sure he's got a book, too. You must have left it out.
I can't. Well, I'm not a writer. I have tried. I swear I have tried to sit down and write a book. I'm not a writer.
But he's quite a broadcaster. We'll be back with Joel Montalvo in a minute. I'm Jerry Pippin, and this is the UFO Files. Tales of the strange and the unknown. Every month in Fate magazine. Fate! Fate magazine has actually been published continuously since 1948. That makes it the longest-running publication of its kind. From psychics and spiritualists, archaeological hotspots and fringe science, to authoritative UFO and paranormal investigations, Fate articles are factual, informative, and entertaining. Subscribe to Fate magazine today. Simply go to FateMag.com, FateMag.com, or check it out at your local newsstand. Fate magazine is a favorite for people looking for answers and for people looking for entertainment.
Fate.
Tales of the strange and the unknown. We are here at the Civic Center in Roswell, New Mexico, the 60th anniversary of the Roswell crash. Joe Montalvo's with us, and Joe, when is your broadcast on the one you do?
Oh, UFO Undercover airs on Wednesdays, 7 to 9.
They can find that on the website. You have programming on the Paranormal Radio Network from 4 o'clock on is live, I think.
From 4 to midnight, 7 days a week, we broadcast live.
Is that Central or Eastern?
Central time. Everything's based on Central time.
And, well, good. There's two of us that do things on Central Time.
I like it better that way, too.
now you actually have a 24-hour operation, or more or less, so people in the daytime, you have a huge audience of office listeners, which is what we all do.
Yeah. And which is
they're supposed to be
audience.
Working, but they're listening to our shows.
I'm happy. Tune in.
It's the American way. Yeah. But it's not only the American way. It's the Australian way and a lot of other ways.
Yeah, because they all seem to be listening, so...
Okay, what's your name?
My name is Dan Garcia.
Okay, where are you from?
I'm from Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Okay, you have a question for Joe?
Yes, I do, sir. I was just wondering...
Sir, I like this guy already.
Trying to give some respect here. I was reading recently about abduction and the correlation to sleep paralysis, how some people feel that abduction, particularly at night, is really sleep paralysis, and I was wondering if maybe you had any insight on that.
Actually, in some cases, it is sleep paralysis. We The problem, and there's a big misnomer with abductions, about 75% of all abductions usually happen in the daytime while you're driving, usually to or from work. It's usually a scenario where it's something that you do on a fairly regular basis. It makes it a lot easier to program your memories when it's a scenario, because what they'll do is they'll just clip a piece of memory and put it in your head like you just were driving to work. But most abductions do happen in the daytime and while you're driving. But there are a lot of them that do fall into sleep paralysis. Some of them fall into abuse cases, things along those lines. You'll be surprised some of the stuff that gets blamed on aliens. But we do pick and go through all of this.
And a lot of programs talk about, you know, it happens in your sleep. There's a lot of evidence. A lot of it happens while you're driving a car.
Yeah, and that's what it is.
At 70 miles an hour, you're probably not.
That always amazed me, that one. I'm like, what do they do? Grab your car and just suck it up while you drive? But hey, that's where most of the reports come in from. So that's one of the things that helps lend a little bit more credibility to the field, too.
Yeah, now in Albuquerque, there's all kinds of things happening there. Sandia Base, right down the road, the Air Force Base, all kinds of stories. You had any contact?
Myself, you mean alien contact?
Personally, right.
Well, personally, yeah.
Or with a secret agent, you can tell me a big story. I don't care.
they said they would assassinate me if I did. No, I'm kidding. No, the reason I asked specifically...
I'm offering you fame. Let's talk.
There we go. Wonderful. No, the reason I specifically asked about the sleep paralysis is because I had an episode after reading The Path of the Skinwalker where I have had a sleep paralysis like most of my life, but I had one where I saw like it looked like the face of a gray as it was dissolving the inside of my eyelids and had the buzzing. It just seemed really specific, and so that's sort of what predicated my question.
Well, I'll tell you what, and when Mr. Pittman's through today, there's going to be a support group meeting held right here. It's all contactees, so come by and see it, and you'll probably learn a lot from them.
And I'm pretty impressed that he called me Mr. Pippin. Joe, what do you mean by that? You mean I'm a damn old guy and you don't want to...
No. You always got to have respect for the people who've been doing it.
Anybody else have a question about abductions? Okay, well, we've got plenty, so we will continue along here and talk. We brought up an interesting subject there. Where do these people get abducted? Joe, is there a common denominator?
Yeah, usually it does seem, in a lot of the cases that they're picked up, usually when they're traveling. A lot of times it's work, but I can guarantee you on this particular conference, probably a good third of the group that was driving in had some type of contact. Most of them will realize it, you know, as time progresses during the conference, but I've already heard two of them since we've been
here. Wait, they're on their way to Roswell, they leave Pennsylvania, they're going to drive 3,500 miles, and they have something happen to them on the way.
Yeah,
we have some Pennsylvania people.
Yeah, they dropped you off, huh? Just in time for the conference. That's a good thing.
No, I remembered him because not everybody drives 3,500 miles to hear the Jerry Pippin show. So you know, it made an impression on me. In fact, she was nice enough to go over to our booth and buy a T-shirt. So
I got to support the radio.
Yeah. So you're actually saying that people have, missing time, I guess, is the best evidence.
Well, actually, no, gain time is. Missing time was one of those things that it seemed was very prominent up until about 94. And we all of a sudden, we couldn't find any cases that had missing time. We were like, well, what's going on here? Did aliens just quit doing what they were doing? We started getting these reports where, I'll give you a particular case out of Pensacola, Florida. There was a couple down there in Pensacola, Florida, left their hotel, right, was driving out to the beach. Now, they left their hotel at 11 o'clock, went and spent some time on the beach. They come back to the car, they get in the car, there's a ticket in the car for 10:05.
But okay.
They didn't get to the beach at 11. Now, the hotel cameras showed them at 11, and the clerk at the store, when they were changing shifts, remembered seeing them. The ticket was dated 10:05, contacted the office, that's what time the car was parked there, that's when I wrote the ticket. No mistake in time, good, credible witnesses all the way around. The person, when they came back, they had gained an hour's worth of time.
How do you explain that?
It seems like in the last decade or so that the extraterrestrials have changed some of what they do in abductions. And I think that had a lot to do with the researchers at hand We were catching on. So I figured that they changed it. It seems like they have the ability to step out of time. It's not like they time travel. It's more like they... We'll have contactees that'll call us that went to bed and woke up the next morning with 3 weeks' worth of growth on their legs or a full beard the next morning. Well, we both know you don't grow a beard overnight. These contactees were actually missed. And then when you start regressing them, they'll have like 3 weeks' worth of memories in their heads.
Wow, 3 weeks. It could end up on a milk carton.
So we found that they somehow have the ability to just focus the time. They'll usually bring you back 5 or 10 or 15 minutes before they pick you up, which I find really strange. This seems like there should be a paradox in there somewhere, yeah. But it seems to work fine for them. And it's something that, you know, it took a while to figure out what was going on. It took a while to catch on to how this was being done, because we were getting really confused. We were always looking for missing time, because that's what it was. Then also we got these reports where people wake up in the morning and find like a pile of sand on their floorboard. Go look at their car, that's 480 miles on their car. Well, as far as they know, they went to bed that night. We actually started tracing these cases. We found these people, they were getting up in the middle of the night, driving down to Navarre Beach, Florida, 10, 15 carloads at a time, going out on the beach and just disappearing. We had crews out there searching the beach, just disappearing. 5 o'clock in the morning, they were back, boom, driving back to the house. Remembers none of it. We even got a couple of them on video. They remember absolutely nothing. They were somehow summoned down there, picked up, dealt with, put back down and drove home. I'm thinking, well, E.T., why don't you just fly over there and pick them up?
Yeah, I've had guests on and people, experiencers, who more or less say they have little, they congregate in a place like mm-hmm. The military uses a staging area.
Yep.
And that's what these people are, the E.T.s are.
Well, Navarre, after the last 15 years of research, we have got cases where families have come down from like Wisconsin, spent the week down there, had 1 day's receipts for food, maybe 2 days worth of pictures, and the other 5 days nothing, just nothing. Hotel cameras show they weren't in the hotel. The rental car was still there. There was no charges on their credit cards. They were just gone, the whole family. And then, you know, they get back, and they're kind of confused because they know they've been in Gulfport, in Navarre for 7 days, but they can only remember a day or two.
When we talk about things like this, and you're in Florida, we're out here in New Mexico. There's no really restriction on where these abductions occur, evidently. I mean,
it doesn't seem that time or space bothers them at all. They seem to reach across our planet quite easily.
I mean, we have people reporting from Manhattan all the time. So, I mean, the big city, little city, out in the desert, doesn't make any difference.
But what's interesting, if you take Larry Hatch's global map and you look at it, and you go back over the last 60 years, because he's got it where you can layer it, you'll see a pattern emerging, especially in the freeway.
That's what I was after. I knew you'd been doing the kind of research. Tell me about that pattern.
Well, we started finding out, especially in the free world countries, that they were congregating. You know, everybody always thinks abductions happen in rural areas, which is true. They do happen in rural areas. 90% of all abductions happen in big cities. New York City is the number one city for abductions, with Mexico City following right closely
behind. And that's
behind
a large city, too.
And, you know, the big cities seem to be where they're controversial. And I guess it makes sense because there's more people there, one-stop shopping kind of a city.
Yeah.
And they seem to want to congregate in specific areas in these cities. You'll find, like, Navarre seems to be a hot spot for some reason, Pensacola. No one really knows why. Maybe it's because Eglin Air Force Base is there or whatever, but it seems to be a hot spot. New York City is definitely a hot spot. I mean, I'm sure you remember the case where the lady was floating out of
sure, and we have people email us all the time from New York City and tell us incidents.
Yeah, and it's one of the hotter spots in the United States. Los Angeles is as well. I'm not exactly sure who they're abducting in Los Angeles, but I got a lot of friends out in L.A., but I got to give them a hard time. They do seem to be, if you really look, you'll find that about 90% of the cases are in large cities or near large cities. You'll also find patterns like they tend to prefer areas where there's deep water or deep water channels. You'll find along like the Mississippi River, the Gulf Coast, the Atlantic and West Coast, you'll find a platitude of abduction cases.
Well, and we talk about deep water UFO sightings, mm-hmm. Underwater sightings. Any evidence from these people who have been abducted that they've been experienced? What kind of place do they take them to usually? Is that always the same room with look like on a spaceship, or where do they go?
We call for the Grays, we call it the Star Room, or the Green Room would be a better thing for it. It's a holding area, but it's a holding area that seems to have a holographic generator because each person describes it differently. One person will tell you, well, they were sitting in a forest of trees with the Grays there. One will tell you that there were stars surrounding them. Another tell you they might be in their living room. But what we found out is this particular holding room, somehow or another, either picks up what the person's thinking and generates it physically or generates it mentally, but that's what the person thinks they're seeing. And we found out because a few of the people remember seeing the room as just the room, as just a white room with nothing in it at all.
These are people without an imagination.
It might be. No, it might be. I mean, there's got to be a specific reason why they didn't trigger it. And it might be that. Or they might not be as imaginative as someone else. Or they may have come more to terms with their contact and they don't need to be lied to.
Well, yeah, that might be that simple. Maybe true. That's probably the truth right there.
But, yeah.
Joe Montalvo, we're almost out of time. Anything you'd like to bring up here? We need to talk about that radio show again.
Oh, guys, yeah, please tune in to UFO Undercover on Wednesdays.
Not that he's begging, but...
please tune in. We need more ratings, the better. Yeah. Also, please join us on www.paranormalradionetwork.com. You'll find an array of interesting shows, both ranging from paranormal with several of our more famous ufologists now on the network with us. So it's a good place to come in and learn and inform. We do have both toll-free numbers and virtual interactive audiences, so you can join, ask questions live, and harass them, whoever you want to harass, and myself included, so you can do that. Also, if you've had any type of contact or any type of sightings, the best place to go for that would be www.icar1.com.
And we have links to all of that and the description and text right up about it. Joe Montalvo, thank you very much.
Thank you, Jerry.
And until next time, I'd like to thank Roberta Scott, our location producer, Jane Swartley, our editor. Cheers.
The year was 1970 when Jack Blanchard and Misty Morgan released their first big single hit, Tennessee Birdwalk. For the first time in the history of music, this 45 RPM single becomes available to the public in the form of a mouse pad. Made of high-quality quarter-inch rubber, this fabric-covered 8-inch mouse pad delivers your mouse a very smooth ride. For only $9.95 plus $2.50 shipping and handling, your mouse pad will be rushed via USPS first-class mail. Simply click on the happy little mice and be directed to our ordering page. Hurry while this limited time offer lasts.